This week on BTB, chaos in Carolina, Tua may retire, Brian Daboll needs to gain back the weight, the boys give their top 10 QBs, book it, and more.
Well, Jack, we're headed into week three of the NFL season, and so far 2 weeks in, I think this has been a carousel of a year. I mean, talk about Bryce Young getting benched. I mean, we got Caleb Williams, he's human. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals are cheeky. The Saints, I mean, there's a lot going on right now, and we're 2 weeks in. I mean, if you want to even talk from like a betting perspective for a second, I think I saw today, I think the six biggest favorites this past weekend all lost.
This has been an incredibly hard year to bet on. This has been an incredibly hard year in terms of the fact that we have to deal with the Raiders beat. The Raiders win games. The Vikings win games. You know, the Patriots win games. The Bengals are 0-2. Even though Joe Burrow, as of last week, looks like he could be back to where he is. The Falcons just beat the Eagles, which makes no sense on paper outside of the fact that the Eagles played exactly like how they did in the second half of last year. And Tua might retire medically, which is like something that, you know, in terms of how obviously and dramatically it happened, is kind of unheard of in terms of like just a single play making someone like never play the game again. You know, it hasn't been like that publicized and loud ever. So this has been an insane year, and I'm happy to break it down this week.
Well, let's get into Tua. I know you mentioned that. Yeah. They're saying that he's not going to retire, though.
Which is concerning for him.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
My thought process with this is, does he really, and this is me objectively as like a Dolphins hater, or subjectively as a Dolphins hater, if you will, but I'm sitting there thinking there's no one besides maybe Dolphins fans out there that think they could really win a Super Bowl with Tua. I'm sorry. After 2 weeks in and even seeing him play, he doesn't look anywhere near Josh Allen. Trevor Lawrence outplayed him in week one, and we talked about how the Jags pretty much gave them that win.
He didn't even look – he doesn't even look like he did last year. He didn't look as good as he did last year. And clearly – I think that like the fact that his body is just taking such a hit and is just under such toil all the time is probably affecting his play style more than they're letting on. And it wasn't even like the man's head is at a point where I'm going to be honest. It's sad that he's considering not retiring, because based on that one statement that Mike McDaniel told him, apparently, where he was like, you need to be the quarterback of your own family before you're the quarterback of this team. Kind of sounds like, and I'm going to look at this not from a human perspective for a second, but as a football perspective, the team the Dolphins currently have would really possibly excel from having another quarterback, possibly someone brand new that Mike McDaniel chose. And I think that team with a brand new, like, I'll say it here, even though I don't necessarily think he's a first-round pick, a Shedeur Sanders in the second round to the Dolphins would be insane. They would be an insanely good team. That would fix many of their issues. Someone with a consistent deep ball that can just put the ball in the middle of the field and have explosive plays, that would be huge for them.
It's no longer about this timing route of saying, hey, Tua, we're going to drop back 1, 2, 3, plant your foot, and the crosser is going to be right over the middle of the field. Because I feel like their offense is somewhat predictable.
Yes, 100%. It's a lot of play action. In terms of the passing game specifically, I'd agree. I feel like in the running game, they're very like explosive with the way they use their motions and things.
I mean, they
like
have
that.
Speed. I understand that. They built their team around saying, hey, we're going to be faster and quicker than everybody else. But the part that I don't understand is the one person on their offensive side, on the offensive side of the ball, that isn't fast or quick in any way is Tua.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, imagine if they had, just because, like a Kyler Murray type player. Imagine if they had Kyler Murray. I think the Dolphins would be insanely good with what they could do with the motions, the trickery, and the run game play action, knowing that, hey, I got a guy that can get outside the pocket and make plays with his legs. When I'm looking at the quarterbacks in next year's draft, I don't think any of them stick out crazily.
I got a guy.
Who?
And you're going to say it, and you're going to be like, oh, that makes so much sense, but Cam Ward.
Cam Ward,
he plays in the same stadium. He's used to having the shade on the one side. You know, the man's mobile, and he has a good arm, and he understands the area, and he's a South Miami guy through and through.
So what do we do with Tua? I don't know, because, I mean, we're going to find out maybe sometime the next couple days what he's going to do or how they're going to go forward. But the Dolphins did sign Tyler Huntley off the Ravens practice squad. I think they understand Skylar Thompson is not it. And they are going to say, well, we're 1-1. We're probably about to go 1-2. Again, they play Seattle this week. Seattle, I think, is going to take care of business. But, I mean, they go 1-2, 1-3. And then if Tua's not back by then, I think they're going with Tyler Huntley. I don't know. I just – the Dolphins right now, I would – they're screwed. I just feel like they are in one of – and it's crazy to say this considering we're going to talk about the Panthers after this.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about how much they invested into Tua, this offense, this plan, for it now to go, well, this guy can't protect himself and, you know, his brain's all messed up because all these concussions.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in a pretty bad situation. I would say probably the top three worst situations in the NFL right now.
On some real, though, you know who might be able to bail out their season?
Who?
Ryan Tannehill.
I saw that, and I don't understand why. I don't know.
It makes sense. Get a guy like Joe Flacco from the in the Browns last year. Get a guy who's been there before, knows how to do
but
it.
But it's
like,
a different offense. It's not the same scheme. It's completely different.
The Cowboys brought back Zeke.
Well, I mean, I don't think they really changed their offensive game plan that much since, you know.
Well, they had to encompass for him being fat and slow. But that was a slight. I apologize. On the real level, Tua does need to retire. And to me, this does kind of highlight an issue with the NFL of the fact that even though injury clauses do exist, I feel as though someone performs their job at like, regardless of like how you feel the semantics on the field, if you just take his raw numbers, he was the passing leader last year, there should be some sort of workman's compensation in the NFL.
Well,
there should be something where people don't have to choose whether or not they can give their families like generational wealth or, you know, not be ripping their teeth out with pliers in a couple years. And genuinely, we're at the point where, like, he needs to stop. He needs to stop. Because I knew people who, like, played football and had, like, 4 or 5 concussions. And their Division III teams, when they came and played out of high school, told them, like, yeah, you can't play. Like, your brain will not be able to recover this. And your impact of this will never be known until later in life. So the man already has $90 million. You know, he already has, in terms of endorsement deals, hanging out with the Costco guys and, you know, whatever else he probably does, he's going to be able to make more. Your family can have a very good life on like tens and dozens of millions of dollars, possibly hundreds. Stop playing, focus on yourself. And the NFL needs to address the situation because it's shady that he might force himself to play in order to have more money. And that shouldn't be the case at all, in my opinion.
Also, too, I will say this about the last thing I'll kind of say on the situation is if I'm Tua, I'm pretty sure I saw the contract or there's a clause where, like you said, he gets $90 million or something like that, right? Dude, take your $90 million. You have a wife. I think he has one kid, one kid, right? Or two kids, something like that. And dude, go back to Hawaii or something. Don't live on a beach for the rest of your life. And the crazy part about it, Tua is going to get more hate, more slander, more criticism if he goes back out there on that field and A, is bad, B, gets hurt again, or C, again shows that the Dolphins aren't going to win a Super Bowl because he's just not that good. And if all those three things happen, he will be ridiculed for making a very dumb decision versus, hey, I'm going to walk away from the game. I think players, coaches would all respect it. Even I think the organization – hey, go retire, and hey, you were a national champion, you were a top 10 pick in the NFL, you got a record-breaking deal, and you know what, injuries derailed your career right when you thought you were going to, you know, get to your peak. I mean, he was an MVP candidate last year for the first 10 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
It's okay to hang him up. I don't understand what his drive to keep going is. I mean, you're not talking about, you know, your ACL, we're talking about your head.
Yeah. Fans don't like moral quandaries. I don't think the Dolphins are a very proud franchise, and the people who are about them are all about the Dolphins. And I don't think it would be a good product to put on the field to have them sit there and watch this guy who can throw the ball, can possibly still perform at like a decent level, but have them sit there realizing like, yeah, we're going to be seeing videos of him in like 50 some odd years. Knowing what we know about head injuries, knowing about concussions, and having him look like how, unfortunately, a lot of these guys who did boxing looked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Muhammad Ali, probably one of the coolest, most badass athletes in American history towards the end of his life with the concussion induced Parkinson's he had. You know, the man was a shell of himself. It was terrible to see. And people aren't going to want to like have to see that. It would just give them like weird vibes. And frankly, and those are the people who are outside of his family. Mm-hmm. So I agree. It needs to end. And this whole thing about staying in for more money is unfortunately what might happen because of the NFL's policies, but they need to change it just for the PR perspective of how bad that might look.
I will say this, switching topics, because I know we had a lot to cover.
Yeah.
But again, injuries, but Jordan Love and the Packers, they found a way to beat Anthony Richardson and the Colts this past weekend.
That's insane.
Shout out Malik Willis. Talk about 12 for 14, 122 yards, rushed six times for 41 yards. I think he threw one touchdown pass. I mean, he didn't look great.
No.
At all. But the Packers, and I think we have to give a nod to Matt LaFleur.
Yeah.
Because he realized Malik Willis sucks. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone knows that this guy cannot just sit back, drop back in the pocket, sit there,
make a read
and make a throw. He physically cannot play quarterback at a high level, but he can maybe manage a game. And that's exactly what Matt LaFleur did. He said, listen, I'm going to rely on my ground game. I'm going to give Josh Jacobs the ball 30 times, which he pretty much did. I believe he gave it to him 30 times. Mm-hmm. And we're only going to throw the ball. We have to throw the ball, and that's it. And we're going to play great defense.
Yeah.
And it worked. It worked. I will say the only interesting thing heading into week three, I don't know if you saw this, they're playing the Titans. We got a little bit of a Malik Willis revenge game, but I think this is going to blow your mind. The Packers are 3-point dogs against Tennessee.
Yeah, I kind of buy that.
Weren't they favorites? No, they were 2-point dogs to the Colts. And in my head, I'm like, you're really giving now the Titans who are 0-2 and Will Levis another half point? I don't know.
So I get your response to that. And it's a multifaceted answer, but the Colts may have a really, 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 really bad defense. Specifically running game, they have a really, really horrendously bad defense. In terms of, they are 31st in the league right now in terms of defensive yards given up, just overall. Most of that coming on the rushing side of the ball. I believe they are, they're 32nd in the league in rushing defense. And their pass defense is a little bit better. But right now the Titans are number one in total defense out of every team. One of the big reasons for that, I think, and this is what's something that Matt LaFleur, we're going to have to see how smart and outside the box that man is. And I don't doubt that could happen.
I just don't see how the Packers lose that game.
Have you watched Devondre Sweat this year?
He looks good. It's more along the lines of, I don't think they can score against the Packers defense. Anthony Richardson couldn't do it, and I understand he played horribly, but they couldn't even run the ball. How is Will Levis going to do this? You know what I'm saying? I mean,
we're hating on Will Levis, and he deserves it, and he deserves it.
I mean, we're going to get into him here in a second too.
But we need to sit back and understand why we had optimism coming into the Titans this year, and that's that. Obviously, the man has really low lows. The man has incredibly low lows. He makes awful decisions and costs the team a game. That being said, in terms of a second round QB, he has made certain throws that I have made no other quarterback drafted in that round. Not a lot of quarterbacks in the first round have been able to do. I believe in him. I think the tough love from Callahan is exactly what they need. I don't think they need to be coddling him and being like, oh, it's okay, like they're doing in Carolina right now. Obviously, they benched him, but like the rhetoric is a little different. I appreciate a hard-ass coach telling a guy that he clearly believes in to an extent that like, you're bad, you need to fix yourself. And that's why I see it where like the Packers' luck might run out, because they're kind of operating like a team that, you know, and it's not the same thing obviously, but you know how teams when they fire like a really bad head coach, like a Josh McDaniels, like one of these guys, and then they get their interim guy and everyone's just like super like jazzed up and like ready to go. I'm feeling like they're operating on that front where like they can win a couple fringe bubble games. But like when it comes to a team like the Titans, I'm going to be honest. I think it might be Titans money line in that one, and that's a personal prediction based on how it all seems to work out with the stats.
So let me get into Will Levis.
Yeah.
I mean, we're 2 weeks into the season, and we've gotten arguably two of the best memes I think we'll get so throughout the whole NFL.
High school kids,
I mean,
hitting,
that's unbelievable.
Hitting the Levis is absolutely
That's insane. What I'm saying. I mean, this dude, game one, throws a – I don't even understand why he threw that ball. Gets on his knees, puts the hand on his head, and then last weekend, obviously, he's about to get sacked. It's like third and goal from the 12, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he just throws the ball backwards.
Yeah.
And it makes it's one of those things where you watch guys like, let me think of, you know, your Jane Daniels, your Caleb Williams, your Kyler Murray's, your Lamar Jackson's, your CJ. I mean, you have guys who know how to be a superhero, right? Mm-hmm. Make those heroic plays and make it look kind of easy. When he does it, it's like, who do you think you are? It's like,
exactly.
What are you doing? Do you think you're that athletic? Which, no, you're not. He was built around, he was at Kentucky, a hard-nosed guy, mm-hmm. where he was like, hey, I can throw a pretty damn good deep ball, and if you get let me tote the rock, I'm going to run a dude over. But he doesn't play that way in Tennessee. He tries to be flashy. And
he plays like he had the college career of Caleb Williams.
When he did it, it's like sit in the pocket, sit in the pocket, and make a good throw, make a good read, but everything to him, it looks so hard.
Uh-huh.
It's like, what am I watching sometimes? And then on the flip side, I mean, when they played the Jets this past weekend, not saying Aaron Rodgers was, you know, fantastic, but it's very obvious to see what a guy who's supposed to, what it's supposed to look like versus mm-hmm. what Will Levis is trying to do. And I'm curious to see how many more losses do you think the Titans are going to have until they potentially maybe switch it and go with Mason Rudolph at quarterback.
Yeah. I think they got like four or five more games. I think they're willing to like see what they have in this guy, 'cause they believe he can be a franchise guy. They got in the second round and lucked out on. They're going to give him his time. They're going to see how he can do in this system and wait for him to show the flashes that he did last year. But I agree. You invest in a backup,
For a reason.
Yeah. And clearly they got like an all-time backup in Mason Rudolph, you know? So I would agree completely that like the struggle is serious and might need to be addressed soon.
Hear me out. They got the next four games, right? You mm-hmm. said four games.
Yeah.
They got the Dolphins. I'm sorry. They got the Packers, the Dolphins, the Colts, the Bills, and then the fifth game's the Lions.
Yeah.
They might win one of those games. They're not being Detroit on the road.
Nope.
They're not being Buffalo on the road.
Nope.
They maybe. I could see them winning two out of those three between the Packers, Dolphins, and Colts. But I think the Colts are going to eventually start figuring it out.
Yes.
And I'm curious to see that Dolphins game because you don't know who's going to be playing
quarterback. Yeah, I don't see a ton of wins in this schedule, even like after that. Like
nope.
The Patriots seem to be playing well. That's probably their best chance up until they play the Commanders. But yeah, right
that's
after
in December,
and right after the Patriots, you go Chargers, Vikings, Texans. Like I'm sorry, to steal a win would be to steal a win in any of those games. You like it would need to require CJ Stroud to like, you know, have a case of acute blindness from the night before. Like it would need to be some sort of act of God. And I'm just not seeing that.
Well, let's talk about someone who's playing really good football right now. And that's Sam Darnold in the Vikings, them beating the 49ers. I think everyone wants to talk about, oh wow, Sam Darnold. But the real hero, I think, in that game was Brian Flores.
Uh-huh.
I think he caught a great defensive plan to hold that Niners offense to 17 mm-hmm. points. I understand they didn't have Christian McCaffrey and Debo was kind of banged up and George Kittle was, you know, dehydrated or whatever. But that was also a Niners team that made that Jets team on Monday Night Football. I know we talked about having one of the better defense in the NFL last year, but they were moving up and down the field with ease.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this Vikings defense is all that talented, but they played really good and they kept Brock Purdy from making big plays, escaping out of the pocket, doing what he does best. They kind of forced him to sit there and make a good throw, and they just were able to not put the ball in his hands. I think I forgot the time of possession was, but the Vikings just controlled that game from start to finish, and right off the bat, throwing a 98-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson, I think that set the tone.
Yeah, 100%. It's difficult for me because obviously I agree with the Brian Flores take in terms of like how they're absolutely just ripping apart offenses right now. People are not understanding how to handle it. I think Sam Darnold specifically on his third stop is a really interesting place for him to possibly flourish. And currently, right now, comeback player of the year, Sam Darnold. It's
2 weeks in.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that we didn't, you know, not that he was deserving of our respect before the season started necessarily, but we completely disrespected him. And you know, based on what we saw in his career with the Jets and the Panthers, there wasn't a lot of a reason to do so. I think the way he's operating, and he's not playing perfectly, you know, he needs to get a little bit better of a control of the ball and like throw a little less picks and turn the ball over a little bit less. But he is operating in a way that like you win games in the NFL, which is to have a explosive passing game and to throw the ball deep down the field and have people be open. Granted, he has great weapons and he has a great offensive line. So what? Stop it. This man was a bust as of 3 years ago. Like, we all remember him when he was on the Jets and the Panthers, which was arguably even worse because
I'm seeing Ghost.
Yeah.
I'm seeing Ghost.
Like, the man is operating like a great quarterback right now. He's not in the top 10. Spoiler alert. But he's definitely a above average NFL QB and has the ability to make it into this year's top 10 QBs. He has that ability right now, and he's playing in that level. And if he stays at this level, he will crack that list.
Well, I know you want to talk about the Giants, so yeah. Let's talk about Brian Daboll.
I called this the Brian Daboll block because it really is the Brian Daboll block. We lost the game because of him. We lost the game because of him. You can blame Malik Nabers. You can blame a defense that bends a little more or that calls itself bend, don't break, but, you know, did bend pretty hard. But the idea, and when I was watching the game, I wasn't as mad at Daboll. Because I was under the impression that what happened to Gano, our kicker, was a freak injury that happened right as the game had started when he was limping off. I assumed that's when it happened. Only to find out that he actually had been injured and showing signs of injury that day. He could have activated an extra kicker that day. Or even had our punter, who has in his past hit a field goal from 40 to 49 yards and has hit multiple field goals from other spots, just kick the ball on an extra point and see what happens. And instead, because he shanked one, we had to go for two, always go on fourth down, because he had absolutely zero faith in this guy who we have seen make field goals before. Why are we paying this man with the added ability that he can be an emergency kicker if we're not going to use him in an emergency kicker situation? It doesn't make any sense. This team is starting to worry me for the complete wrong reasons. Our weapons are there. Our O-line is there. Daniel Jones played well last week. Wasn't amazing, but he's still going to be the starter. The Drew Lock starting conversation is now over. What Brian Daboll is doing, and it's weird to say this because he was the former coach of the year, and I firmly believe in his offensive mind, is absolutely losing us games. It's losing us games. It's making people like Brian Flores look like geniuses, which maybe they are, but there's a good chance they aren't. It's making our entire roster, which has talent, look awful. And as of now, the Commanders and Vikings, those are the only gimmies we could have had. Those are the only games that, like, realistically, with the rest of our schedule coming up, we're not going to beat the Browns. We're not going to beat the Eagles. We're not going to beat the Cowboys. We're not going to beat any of these teams. And it's because everything is broken at such a fundamental level where we thought we had this correct with a coaching, offensive coaching genius, coach of the year, and they're just blowing it. And they're just blowing it, and there's nothing else you can say about it other than we lost a stupid game, a historic game where they didn't score any touchdowns. We scored three, and we somehow lost. It needs to be put on someone, and I am putting it on Brian Daboll. I'm not putting it on Malik Nabers, even though he was good enough of a teammate to put it on himself. I'm not. I'm putting it on him.
Feel good?
No.
Well, I don't feel much better about my team either, so we'll get to that one later. I'll go on my little spiel. But a man I have praised on this podcast, I have praised to anyone that would listen to me, is Caleb Williams. And he's human after all. And that's upsetting for me because I wanted him to be good and for Chicago to have a quarterback that was going to get him over the hump. But, and this is a big but, I don't think the blame is all on him. I think there's a couple plays that I saw over the past couple of days of some off the off their offensive linemen blocking the Texans pass rush, and
their O line looks horrendous.
Their O line is horrible. Even that one play, I think you remember this, Jack.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Caleb Williams breaks out of like two sacks and kind of tries to split up the middle of the field, only get like shoestring tackle.
Yeah.
The unbelievable part about that is I think there were six Bears players around him and three or four Texans defensive linemen, and they just watched him get tackled. When you're looking at the other side of the view, Caleb Williams had the first down. He would have broke that and ran at least 20, 25 yards. No one was going to catch him. And if you don't got an offensive line, you can't protect your quarterback. I think the offensive scheme itself is horrible. I don't understand either why the Bears hired Seattle's old offensive coordinator when Seattle was one of the worst offenses in the league last year and said, yeah, we're going to bring him in. He's gonna figure this thing out. They can't scheme anyone open. I don't think I've watched both Bears games, and I haven't seen Caleb Williams drop back to pass, three-step drop back, put his foot in the ground, and boot, go, bam, that guy's open. No, that is not. He just sits there and then has to roll out and make something happen. It looks like Justin Fields kind of all over again, which I don't understand. And secondly, Rome Odunze dropped the touchdown pass, I think, on a really nice ball that Caleb Williams threw. I mean, his whole thing coming out of college was he was a for sure number one receiver. He was a go up and get it type of guy. He knew how to high point a ball, and he was your security blanket. I haven't seen anything out of him that makes me feel that way. DJ Moore hasn't done anything. And also, too, I think it's really bad that the media is now throwing out the whole DJ Moore clip last year of him saying, nah, I think Justin Fields is better than Drake May and Caleb Williams, because now you're creating this whole
thing. He needed to say that. He couldn't not have said that.
At that point in time. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. And that's what bothers me about it, is because now you're creating this narrative when, don't get me wrong, it doesn't help that Caleb Williams is Caleb Williams in the sense of, oh, I know I'm the best, like, whatever. Calls his punter, hey, we're not going to be doing that a lot, even though I think he leads the league in punting right now.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is, it's frustrating because they could have beat the Texans on Sunday easily. Yeah. Their defense, the Bears defense, I think is legit. I think they are good. And I think they are going to keep them in some games, but it's unbelievable. I mean, golly, their offense scores 20 points. You win a football game. Even going back to the week before, I mean, don't get me wrong, Will Levis pretty much handed it to him, but it's the same thing. If your offense was able to put the ball in the end zone once or twice, you'll win the football game, which that is what I don't understand. I don't think Caleb Williams is to blame necessarily, because I think in his eyes, he feels like he has to play hero ball because this offense isn't simplified for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he needs to go and do is, hey, take a step back. How am I going to run a competent NFL offense to go down the field and put points on the board? I think he's trying to make these big plays, flashy plays, but they're going to come over time. And I don't think he's really grasped that yet. But all I know is the Bears need to figure something out, because we know it's going down in Carolina, which I don't think is going to be the case here in Chicago, but they got to start winning some games, because that division right now looks pretty wide open, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's concerning, because a lot of the predictions I had are like kind of becoming true in a way that I didn't expect them to, in the sense that like I thought like some of the issues with the Bears could be like one of these things could be their issue, where like the O-line doesn't play as well and it hurts them, or Caleb Williams does a little too much hero ball and it hurts them, or like we don't know necessarily about how proven these weapons are, or how good Matt Eberflus is at like controlling an offense like this. But it kind of seems like that's all happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like specifically the people who like played well last year, like Darnell Wright played well last year as a tackle and is currently just all over the place in terms of his feet. He looks slow. He looks fat. I'm going to be honest, like he does not look like a competent player, and it's killing them, because it's kind of putting Caleb Williams into a really similar situation he had at USC, where he had really bad tackle play and he just had to make something happen. And when that would happen, he would play at his worst. And that's really bothersome. And obviously I think he's going to be a great player. I think the trajectory they're on should be good, but yeah, man, I'm kind of comfortable saying that this probably is not their year. This probably is not their year as a team, and it's sad to say, because they deserve better than that.
Now let's flip it over to the NFC West, because we're talking about injuries galore in that division. We got CMC out, Debo's out, Cup's out, Puka's out. Kenneth Walker didn't play last week. And Jack, we're kind of looking around saying, well, why not the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah.
They almost beat the Bills in week one. They should have. They should have beat the Bills in week one. And they handed it to LA. I have never seen McVay get whooped like that ever.
That was actually insane.
Considering how bad that they just beat them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Stafford didn't have a chance. And I understand Matthew Stafford is still a pretty darn good quarterback. But, man, no Puka, no Cup. Who's he throwing the ball to? You know, I mean, their run game is not going to keep them afloat. I think the Rams are in trouble. Seattle is...
They're kind of taking the role of what we thought the Saints would be this year as kind of the most boring team.
Yeah, but they find ways to win.
Yeah.
They find ways to win.
Geno Smith's still playing well.
They're 2-0.
Future Giants quarterback Geno Smith is playing pretty okay. I'm happy to hear that. I kind of agree with your assessment here. There seems to be some serious dysfunction in San Francisco. Obviously, they are well coached and have the ability to win games because through their just, you know, sheer ability to just be competent, as we saw in that Jets game. But overall, like, the Cardinals are playing lights out. And it's difficult to look around and say, obviously, this is week two. There's a lot of football left to be played. But the vibes couldn't be higher. People remember that Kyler Murray was a first overall pick and one of the most hyped first overall picks we've seen in a while. People forget how talented and how good and how, like, even while he was with the Cardinals, even with Cliff Kingsbury, they had some playoff. They had some success. They made it through the playoff.
Yeah.
I was going to say playoff success, but that wouldn't be correct. They were an okay team that was at times flashier and it brought them hate, but realistically, they were better than the sum of their parts. And right now, they seem to have finally kind of put together, because I've believed in Gannon for a long time. As of last year, I agree. There was no way for to make that team successful. The roster was just awful. Clayton Tune taking snaps. But right now, they seem to have taken this O-line of Will Hernandez, Paris Johnson, and Hjalte Froholt and made it into something. And I'm incredibly impressed by that. And with the lacking of the rest of the NFC West, it goes back to one of my favorite quotes from TV all time, Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. I know you've never seen this, but the context will make sense. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Right now, the Cardinals are climbing that ladder, and I'm into it. I'm into it.
Well, this is a good segue as we get into our top 10 quarterbacks, specifically right now.
Right now.
After 2 weeks in the NFL season, before people start getting upset, I already know the comments on Instagram are going to go crazy considering our power rankings were, not many people agreed with them, but we're okay. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care what the people say. Yeah. You're listening. You're gonna hear these bad takes.
They told Henry Ford he was crazy too. And you know what? 49ers at 8 doesn't look that crazy now, does it?
Yep.
Doesn't look that crazy now.
Well, Jack, let's get into our top 10 quarterbacks. I will say this: the first four on our list are exactly the same.
Yep.
So we'll go. You want to go in at 5? You just want to. So let's go. At 4, our top 4, we got Mahomes, Josh Allen, CJ Stroud, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can say, I have no thing to say about any of them.
Yeah, some of the people could be like, oh, look at the stats, look at this, look at whatever. We all know those are the guys.
Yeah.
We all know that probably, you know, we're looking at the NFC-AFC title game. A couple of those guys are going to be playing it at minimum. I agree. There's no other justification other than we know what they do. They win games. We'll leave it at that. Obviously, there's been some struggles with some of them. Lamar Jackson, obviously, I still believe in Lamar. They've had some just rough go of it the 2 weeks. I still believe in them. But yeah, we can go at from 10 to 5. So right, do you want to go first?
Let me get into 5.
Okay.
At number 5, we just talked about him, but I got Kyler Murray. I think he's playing like a top 5 quarterback right now in the league.
Yeah.
I think, again, you brought up a great point. People forgot this was a first overall pick, a Heisman Trophy winner, a dual sport athlete. This guy can do it all. And he said before the season, you're going to feel me once I get back. I'm ready to come back. He hung up Call of Duty headset and he put the cleats back on and said, hey, let's get into it. And the Cardinals are cheeky. I like them a lot. I'm a big Arizona guy right now. I have no problem with Murray at 5.
I got Jared Goff at 5. And I recently learned this man has haters. I don't completely understand why. Maybe if you're kind of like a bitter Rams fan, I can get that. But everyone's comfortable talking about his weapons as being elite, right? Everyone's comfortable talking about, oh, they have the best O-line. Oh, Amon-Ra St. Brown is great. Oh, once they unlock Jameson Williams, that's going to be fantastic. And it seems like they kind of have to an extent. Their running game is good, which obviously doesn't have anything to do with him, but just a little sidebar. Sam Laporta is a great tight end. What I'm seeing is a player that can go to the Super Bowl with, frankly, way worse than that, with much worse weapons he had in that game than they do here. I see a player that can have unlimited amounts of success. He plays good football. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's not necessarily flashy. He's not necessarily getting in the media. But I kind of like that in my guy. And I'm comfortable making him be the fifth best quarterback because I still think he's the quarterback that's going to be hoisting a Lombardi trophy at the end of this year. I still firmly believe that. Maybe the Lions have gotten a little fat and lazy. Maybe. Just like a tad bit. But that's impossible. It's impossible to follow up from what they did last year. I'm still comfortable. Jared Goff, fifth best quarterback in the NFL. That's a take I'm pretty comfortable with, and I hope he moves up because I think Detroit needs it.
We agree on number 6, and this is another guy I think deserves a lot of praise, but Baker Mayfield, again, another first overall pick.
Yeah.
A guy that was, I mean, pretty much
dead in the water.
Dead in the water with the Browns. I mean, he took him to the playoffs, first win in I don't know how long, and they pretty much casted him aside after one bad year. He went to Carolina, didn't look good. He went to the Rams, and I mean, one drive pretty much turned him to, made him a starter in Tampa Bay, and he has taken full advantage of it at 29 years old. His poise, his leadership, his demeanor, everything about him has changed, and I think he understands what it means to be an NFL quarterback, and he deserves to be a top 10 quarterback as of right now, no doubt.
It's absolutely nuts that, and it feels like a long time ago, but like a year ago now, a little bit over a year ago now, people were like, oh, who's it going to be? Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask? Oh, look at this out-of-context clip from practice where Baker Mayfield throws a bad ball. Isn't he just as bad as Kyle Trask? Meanwhile, I don't think there's a single person outside of maybe the people in the top 5 of the teams we've listed. And maybe then, I don't know for sure. I don't think anyone doesn't want Baker Mayfield to be their quarterback right now. He looks great. He stopped doing the goofy stuff. He's just playing good ball. And right now is statistically one of the best quarterbacks. It's just a matter of how much can he sustain it. Can he really hang with these big dogs, these Mahomes, these Allens, these CJ Strouds? I don't know. I don't know if this is maybe a 2, 3, 4, 5 game thing. But right now, based on how we put the parameters of the list, I got no problem putting him at 6, 6 best quarterback in the NFL.
Now, let's go into number 7. We're different on this one. You have Kyler Murray.
Yep.
Which I know we touched on. I got Dak Prescott. I understand that they lost last week, but he's another guy where I look at like a Lamar Jackson, a CJ Stroud, those type of guys where I'm like, no, he's a top 10 quarterback without a doubt in my mind. He didn't lose that game for Dallas on Sunday. It's the defense that gave up 40 points. I'll say it now. They were, I think at the 30, the Saints like 40, 35, 40 yard line right before halftime, knowing they were going to get the ball out of half down by 2 scores. And they were marching down the field. Dak throws the ball over the middle of the field, gets intercepted because Jalen Brooks slips on his route and it's returned. Saints end up scoring a touchdown, 3 possession game. And it was over at halftime pretty much.
Yeah.
But he kept him in it as, I think, long as he could have. If they go score a touchdown there, I remember watching the game with you and saying, well, if they score here, it's a one-possession game. Going in halftime, we get the ball. It's not over. Our defense is going to have to figure it out eventually. Or who knows? It could have just turned into a shootout-type game. But Dak made some good throws. He played well. I think if anyone turns on that game and said Dak was the reason they lost, I think it's ridiculous to think that. This defense it's unbelievable how they struggled with any type of offense out of that Shanahan coaching tree. But I will say this. I think Dak Prescott, without a doubt, still a top 10 quarterback as of right now. And it's going to be interesting to see them go against Baltimore on Sunday.
I'm going to use the time I would have spent to talk about Kyler Murray to explain, because I did consider putting Dak Prescott on this list. What stopped me was, I don't mean this in a necessarily super adversarial way, Tomas, but Cowboys fans have a little too much of a victimization going on of Dak Prescott when that doesn't make a lot of sense from an outside observer. Meaning, there's like, oh, who's the number two tight end? Oh, the running game isn't as good anymore. But you still have a good O-line. You still have great tackle play. You have one of the best, if not the best, weapon in the NFL in CeeDee Lamb, who has insane yak plays. And with that overall, the way Dak himself has been looking at reads, playing the ball, throwing it, his success has come from people like CeeDee Lamb doing crazy yak stuff. It has not come from him impeccably placing the ball and elevating the talent around him. It kind of seems like the talent around him is elevating him right now. I don't dislike Dak. I think he has a good chance of, I'm almost certain he will end the year in the top of this list because they just, you know, go so crazy in the offseason. They haven't even played the Giants yet, so that'll be a stat patter. But to me, I can't put him in right now based on what I've seen. I can't. Daniel Jones had more passing yards than him in week one, and that was his best game.
Let's get into number eight. We're the same on this one.
Yeah.
Derek Carr.
He looks good.
I don't even want to talk about it. You can talk about
Derek Carr. Well, no, we'll talk about them later.
We'll
talk about them later, but Derek Carr looks good. You'll have to wait until later in the episode for that.
Number nine, I got Joe Burrow. I think the way he played this past weekend against Mahomes shows again why he is a top 10 quarterback in this league. The guy went to a Super Bowl, for crying out loud. He, again, another first overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion. The cat can ball. And he did everything he could have to win them that game. I'm upset that they lost because I think they deserve to win that game more than the Chiefs did. I still don't understand how as a defender with the game on the line, not being situationally aware of a ball thrown 6 yards short of the first down to make you go and try and knock the ball out of the air, pass interference, automatic first down for my homeboy, and they kick a field goal. It's like, it was, and everyone said, oh, the refs bailed him out. No, it wasn't a pass interference. He got there early.
It was definitely a pass.
And I'm sitting there watching the game. I go, oh, it's over. And then I couldn't understand how, as a defender, you make that play knowing if he caught that ball, he is still like 6 yards short of the first down ball game. Don't understand that, but Joe Burrow, he's the truth. They're going to figure it out. They're going to figure it out.
I think they will. As of what I've seen so far, I can't just automatically slate him in here because, yeah, he will play well in a road game against probably the best team. And it makes no sense. But then he plays a week before against a team that, I'll be honest, even though the defense might be good, he should win and he should cover the spread. And he didn't. And I it's a little bit similar to the Dak Prescott situation where, like, I just need to see more right now. Because as of, like, 2 years ago, I was telling everyone I knew, watch out, Joe Burrow's the best quarterback in the NFL. I drafted him in fantasy last year. I watched a lot of badness from his output after it seemed like he was going to be top five, top four, maybe the best. And right now I can't put a ton of faith in it because I need the consistency to be back. I need to look at that guy and be like, this is the guy who doesn't care how bad his O-line is. He doesn't care about getting hurt. He's just ready to play the game and sling the ball downfield and get explosive plays. And right now, I don't know if he's that guy. I'm not comfortable in that decision. I put Brock Purdy at number nine. I feel like he's kind of the opposite right now. I feel like he's kind of elevating the talent around him more than the talent that exists anymore because of all these injuries and the fact that their O-line's in shambles. I feel like I've never felt like Brock Purdy is like going to be a man who wins a Super Bowl on his own. And I really don't think he can. He needs kind of every part of that machine to be operating at once, but I'll never discount him. He's arguably one of the grittiest quarterbacks on this list, probably the grittiest in the NFL. That may be a personal opinion, subjective take, but I got to feel that way about him. And right now I don't see any reason to keep him out of the top 10.
And closing up my list is Kirk Cousins. And the reason he is number 10 is because of what he did against the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football. Getting the ball back, no timeouts, less than, what was it, a minute 30?
Yeah.
Going right down the field, what was it, it's like 6-7 plays, dot, touchdown. I lost in fantasy because of that Drake London touchdown, but I didn't care because the Eagles lost.
Yeah. I was going to put Kirk Cousins on there. I just, when we were watching the earlier part of that game, he just looked really bad and has looked really bad outside of that drive for the past couple weeks. But I wanted to put him there. I instead put Jaden Daniels. He's a rookie on a bad team, and somehow he's making plays happen. Like, he's incredibly shifty. He might be one of the more pure athletic right now in terms of the top three, in no particular order for most athletic. It's like Lamar, Richardson, and him. And I can't see any reason to keep him out because he truly is a guy that, like, once they figure out that defensive side of the ball and once they get a little bit better heads on the offensive line, they might actually be a formidable team that, like, hangs with, like, the top of the NFC East. I think he's a franchise guy.
I think so, too. He has shown – I think we all knew that going into this. He is 100% probably the most pro-ready guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all knew that coming out of LSU because of the scheme. He was in that offense for a long time. He was a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see the future for Jaden Daniels. Not from a Cowboys fan perspective, but just as a ball enjoyer.
Because
I think he's going to be pretty good. And now we got our top 10 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Let's get into our next topic. Our dude of the week, Jack, yours really surprises me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was fired up last night. Ridgewood, New Jersey stand-up. This week's Dude of the Week is Younghoe Koo. Let's be real. Most people nationally aren't completely familiar with what this man's game is, and I think we need to make it known that he is possibly one of the best kickers in the NFL and single-handedly put the Falcons in the situation to win that game because Kirk Cousins and Drake London and Bijan are going to get a lot of the credit. But at the end of the day, who is the Falcons' highest-scoring player? Younghoe Koo. Who was the highest scoring player in the NFL not too long ago? Younghoe Koo. This is a guy who got cut. And obviously, a little bit emotional here going to being alumni of the same academic institution. But the fact that he gets cut from the Chargers on what I always found to be a stupid reason to cut him because he did miss a field goal. But then the next field goal he missed was completely because of the people blocking for him. Like the guy made a field goal blocking maneuver that a no competent like high school player would have made where he blocked down instead of out instead of down, which, if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, I can't really explain it without visual, but the man simply is automatic from every part of the field. People forget those multiple onside kicks that he did a couple years back, or maybe it was last year. I can't exactly remember. The man is unbeatable, probably the most athletic kicker in the league. And right now, no, they don't win that game without him. And they are not, the Falcons are not in the situation where they can win the game without him because overall they've been playing bad, especially offensively, especially in terms of any sort of offensive output. So right now, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if you go to a Falcons game and you see quite a few Younghoe Koo jerseys. I'm going to be honest, dude of the week, congratulations, Younghoe.
I'm going to flip it over to college football, and I'm so excited to say this, but Marcell Reed. And for you guys out there that don't know who this is, that's Texas A&M's backup quarterback who went into the swamp and beat the brakes off of them Florida Gators. Aggs win 33-20. Reese, 11 of 17, 178 yards, 2 passing touchdowns. Oh, wait, there's more. 13 carries on the ground, 83 rushing yards, and a rushing touchdown. This guy was a true freshman last year and had to come in and play in our bowl game against Oklahoma State. I think A&M was down like 20 points and almost single-handedly came back and won that game for them. This guy is not just dude of the week. He is that dude. I would not be surprised if Mike Elko has a decision to make and we might be seeing Reed the rest of the way for the Aggies. He was the SEC freshman of the week. He really deserves his praise for what he did against Florida. He makes this offense way more advanced, and it's tough to stop this Colin Klein offense when you got a guy who can run the ball as effectively as he did. I mean, that juke move he had on that Florida defender, I know if you're on Twitter, Instagram, you saw it. The cat can ball. The mm-hmm. cat can ball. And I'm really excited to see about him going forward. Things might be not looking too bad for the Ags, Jackson.
I think Marcel Reed's going to be a starting quarterback. Wegman has not looked good. And if you'll win your games, even if it's against the Florida Gators, I think you got to rock with that and build something from it.
And Jack, our squad of the week, I think this one is, I think we can both agree on this one.
Yeah.
I think it's the Minnesota Vikings. 2-0. We talked about Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
We got to talk about Kevin O'Connell. He has done a great job coaching this team. I mean, he outcoached Shanahan. Brian Flores outcoached Shanahan. There's a lot of praise in Minnesota. I know if you're a Vikings fan, you're
two coaches of the year. He's beaten and just completely outcoached.
Yeah.
Two coaches of the year.
Yep.
Not talked about enough. I had them winning 5 games this year mentally in my head. And that was before JJ McCarthy got hurt.
Yeah.
I completely wrote them off and was just like, the quarterback's not going to work. It's going to be bad. And for all the reasons we've said, it's working out. So you can't hate on that, even though one of them was against the Giants. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen. That's besides the point.
Now let's flip it mm-hmm. and talk about our NAF of the week. And that's Bryce Young for me, Jack. I mean,
mm-hmm.
gosh, I feel so bad for him. But when you look at the stats, it's bad. He's 23 years old. It's a crazy thing, but he's the same age as us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he becomes the first quarterback selected number one overall, which since 1967, to be benched for non-injury-related reasons in his second season. He posted a career-low 6.4 QBR this past weekend against the Chargers. He's now 2-16 as a starter. He's thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. This is also another crazy stat I saw. The Panthers have converted NFL worst. 2 of 22 on third down opportunities under Young in those games started.
That's got to be some of the worst football to watch.
Including 1 of 12 against the Chargers. I just don't understand it. That's really bad. I only feel for the kid because on Sunday after that loss, head coach said, hey, Bryce is our guy.
Mm-hmm.
Canales said, this is our guy. And a day later, he's getting benched for what did it call him? The Red Rifle, the Red Rocket?
Mm-hmm.
Andy Dalton, who's going to get another chance to be a starter. If you want to talk about something kind of funny,
yeah,
the line was Panthers +7. It went to 6 after Bryce Young was benched, and the total went up from 38 to 40. I really don't think...
I didn't know that. That's actually insane.
They're basically saying Andy Dalton's going to give him a better chance of winning. We're going to find out on Sunday, because if Andy Dalton also doesn't look good or this offense stalls out, I don't know. I just can't believe that Bryce Young is that bad.
Yes.
It's hard for me to like really understand how this guy, as many games as he won in college with Nick Saban, a Heisman Trophy winner as well, that he is just this bad in the NFL, and I really am going to hold out hope that it's not all his fault.
Yeah. Well, I got more to say on that, but it's going to be later. So now we got a very special mailbag, quite an unusual one, because it's from someone who hasn't given a mailbag question yet. It's in fact my father. So while he called me last night, he said, Dave from Ridgewood, New Jersey asked, do the Bad Takes in Boston fellas think the Saints are a legitimate team? Tomas, the floor is yours.
Man, I don't think they're legit for two reasons. One, they played the Panthers week one. I get Derek Carr played really well, but they played the Panthers in week one. Week two, I thought the Cowboys were going to take care of business. But again, that offensive line looked really good. Kamara looked vintage. And Derek Carr was slinging the rock. It felt like everyone was getting open. And they're scoring points. They look good. I'm not going to, undermine that in any shape or form. But I just don't believe in Derek Carr as the guy. I just don't get it. They're playing the Eagles this week at home. They're 2.5-point favorites. I just don't get it. I just physically can't wrap my head around the Saints being a good football team with Derek Carr as their quarterback and Dennis Allen as their head coach. I think they're going to come back to earth eventually. There's nothing that changed about this team from last year to this year. So I want to know what's happening. You know what I mean? It's been two games, and again, they played the Panthers. And they played the Dallas Cowboys, who did the most Cowboys thing possible, where they blow someone out in week one when they were projected to lose and get their ass kicked in week two because they come in feeling like they're on top of the world and they get humbled. It's literally every single year this happens. You know, they win the games they're not supposed to and lose the games they're supposed to win. That's literally what it's like being a Dallas Cowboy fan. I don't think the Saints are legit. I don't believe in this team long term, and I still think Tampa Bay is a better situation, a better team overall than New Orleans, and I think they'll show that when they face off eventually.
I gotta be honest, I can't help but disagree. I can't, because what we have seen so far defies a lot of explanation, but it does have a degree of historical precedent. They have tallied 91 points in the first two games of the season. Only two games have done that or more since the merger in 1970. 1971 Cowboys did 91 points. 2009 Saints had 93. Ironically, two teams we've already talked about. And both those teams went on to win the Super Bowl. You might be asking, well, what's the exact comparison between those teams? The Saints played the Panthers and the Cowboys, a really, really bad team, and a team that could be anywhere from, like, really lame and mid to like possibly great. We don't know. Well, when the 71 Cowboys scored 91 points in those first two games, they beat the Bills, who were 1-13 that year, and the Eagles, who were 6-7-1. The 2009 Saints, who scored 93 points, beat the Lions, who were 2-14 in Matt Stafford's first year ever. And then they beat the Eagles, who were 11-5. Kind of seems to me that there is a bit of historical precedent for, like, even if they are playing awful dog water teams, if you put up that many points in an NFL game against NFL players, something's happening. I don't know if it's insane. I don't know if they're going to win the Super Bowl, go far in the playoffs, even necessarily make them. But what we are watching is something potentially very, very cool, where a really boring team coming into the season is playing good offense and is playing good defense. And they've done it against, and as much as we want to be like, one of the teams was the Panthers, the other team was the Cowboys.
Fair enough.
You can't hate. Maybe they're not the fifth best team in the country, but they were definitely a good team. And it's difficult to say that, like, they were supposed to do something better. That's all I can identify for at this moment.
Well, I think we're going to see what happens with the Saints. I think you bring up a good point that at very minimum, something cool might be going on in New Orleans. And if they keep winning, that's going to be really good for the state of Louisiana.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm curious to see what happens. And of course, to close up another episode, we got to book it, Jack.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first on this one. Thursday Night Football.
Yep.
Pats, Jets. It's not bad takes in Boston without us talking about the Pats just a little.
Oh, yeah.
I see Ramondre Stevenson having himself a game. That Jets run defense does not look good. Tony Pollard ran the ball very well against them last week. And the week before, Jordan Mason, we saw what he did. Ramondre Stevenson, get right game. I love him to find the end zone. And I also like the Patriots to keep this interesting as well. The Pats are a gritty team. They don't look good on paper, but when the lights come on Sunday and they lace up those cleats and put those pads on, they're ready to play football. Maybe Mayo is the guy. So far, 2 weeks in, they had a chance to be 2-0. They could have beat Seattle. They took them to overtime last week, and they're going to give the Jets, I think, a run for their money this on Thursday. But I love me some Stevenson this week. I see him 100% finding the end zone. I'm taking Ramondre Stevenson, touchdown, book it.
Dropped the ball last week, guys, but don't worry. Book it with P-Fund is officially back. The Raiders-Panthers is a game that will be played. Not much more to say about that than that. But based on my very careful analysis I think that Raiders Panthers over 40 and a half is not only doable, but it's my book it of the week. This is the Andrew Gregory Dalton get right game. They're benching Bryce Young, not necessarily because they don't believe in what he potentially could be, but because they need to see if the issue is him or if the issue is the Dave Canales offense. I, frankly, at this point, have more reason to believe in Andy Dalton, a player who has been to the playoffs multiple times, has for a long time was just known as the most average quarterback in the NFL.
He was.
The decidedly most average, to succeed in what an offense that we don't know necessarily how good or bad it is, but we have reason to believe he's probably going to be better. The Panthers are 30th in pass defense. They have 2 sacks on the entire year. They're also 31st in run defense, allowing close to 200 rushing yards per game. Carolina has a legit offensive line with a good quarterback. And I'm not even saying good. I'm just saying better quarterback behind them. Things could get interesting. The Raiders have a good run defense. Not that, you know, the Panthers running game really matters at all, but are 28th in passing defense. Gardner Minshew has also been playing well. Gardner Minshew has exceeded the expectations set forth for him pretty hardcore. I got no reason to believe that this can't be a 21-20 game. I got no reason to think that. It's going to be grimy. It's going to be gross. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a similar level of just two teams like the Commanders and Giants just kind of taking stabs at each other. I like the over. Book it.
I love that, Jack. You sold that one. I think I'm going to bet that over. I like it a lot. I really do. And to wrap this thing up, I think we can both agree on this one, Jack. Listen, we do this for the people, right?
The people.
We are for the people, a podcast for the people. So, listeners, tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what rant you want us to go on. Who do you want us to talk about? What are some ways we can elevate this podcast as well? Tell us what you want to see, what you want out of me and Jack, and we will make that happen. We're Bad Takes in Boston for a reason. We're a podcast for the people and by the people, and we'll see you next week.